I have an unpopular opinion. Everything you wear that's wool, that goes on your upper body, whether it's a jacket or a vest or a shirt or whatever, has to have buttons. It shouldn't have zippers.
Oh.
Yeah. I have a pullover that's like a quarter zip, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It would be kind of cool if it had buttons. You know, it's more, I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, yeah, more modern, I guess.
With a zipper, yeah.
Because, like, so Stormy Cromer makes those vests. I've got that charcoal, like you've got the Filson version of what I have. And I really like that vest because it has buttons on it. Like,
yeah,
I just
the buttons
think
the
zipper,
that, like, yeah.
It's just, it just looks.
You can't have a wool zippered vest. That'd be dumb.
No, and all of the ones that they sell, like if you go to Jay's and you go look at them, most of the ones you find in the store have zippers on them.
Thanks.
So, I don't know. I always really liked having the buttons on it.
Yeah, I like buttons. The only thing that sucks is when you get a little too fat and you can't button them. You know, a zipper, you can kind of...
You could do that with buttons. You just got to not have little doll hands like you have.
Yeah, that's all right.
So this year I'm going to be completely wool set up because I also got those green wool pants.
You have green on the bottom and red up top?
Yeah, dude.
Attaboy.
That'd be cool.
Like a fucking Canadian.
That's funny. We're rolling right now.
Are we?
Yeah, you ready to start?
I don't care.
All right.
That's the spirit.
Welcome back to Knox and Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else we feel like talking about. Episode 6 today, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. 5 comes out Friday.
So, cruising right along. The, just got done shooting bows. Some of us are fucking dialed. Others not so much. You're actually more accurate, Justin, with a trad bow.
No. I mean, not if I shoot my compound at 20 yards, I'm good. A trad bow at 20 versus a compound at 40, yeah. Just because my bow's being funny.
Well, it's just a sight tape.
Yeah, it was dialed in and something happened. Now it's less than dialed in and I got a...
So you pulled 70 when you shot mine and Jarrett's bows.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to crank it up to 70? If you're at like 60, you're like 63 right now?
No, I'm at like 58.
Okay, so probably a bump up to like 65 would be good.
Yeah. Yeah, if I have to retune anyways, I'm going to bump it up.
Well, it's probably smart to run it through paper. I do anyway, and my bow was actually off. Jared's bow was off after we changed the draw length. I'm out of time. But what did that take, 20 minutes to fix?
About 2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't have the press the first time, but...
Yeah, but like total time, I'd say maybe adjusting draw length and then fixing the timing issue and then getting the pin all figured out, maybe like half hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But that was also just dinking around and stuff too, so...
Right. Yeah, it's... I think it's good, period, for everybody to just... check their setups before they go out. The same thing with rifle, like just make sure everything's sighted in, that it's grouping good, whatever.
Yeah, that's like what I was talking about with that 30-06. I've got to re-sight it in because we've been running for quite a while. When I was younger, like I started using that gun, I want to say I was 14 or 15, and I didn't really like big guns that much. So we had custom light loads from Hornady.
Yeah.
And they were expensive, so we're not just going to shelve them and forget about them, right? So we'd been using those until we ran out. Finally, last year, we ran out of them. So now we got to re-sight it in for regular 30-06 rounds.
We should do that after work this week, because I got to shoot my gun for that early antler us.
You're going to come up here. We're going to go to the range down the road, because you can get on a table, and they've got good target set up and everything. So
down the road,
there's a private range just down the road from my house.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's like private, public, kind of whatever.
Well, we can also set up a chair and a table right here, Like Alan's got Alan's range will go out to what 200 yards, I think.
I don't know. I've never been there.
If you go back to his deer blind, it'll go pretty far.
Well, let's do that. I'm 100% game. We just got to check with Alan, make sure he's cool with that.
Every time I've asked, he's always, yeah, whatever.
Well, is because it's right next to the house, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, just double check. But
yeah, right in his front yard, blown up tannerite. And
yeah, that's what's up, dude. The while I was driving here, speaking of just down the road, there's a turkey with like a, had to be a 10-inch beard. Like that fucking beard was almost touching the ground just walking down the road. I'm like, dude, where the hell were you in the spring?
Oh, yeah. You know? I've got a bunch of those. They're always wandering around out here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that and deer. I get deer in the front yard all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the funniest thing. When you show up and it's like, there's a deer right outside Jared's bedroom window.
Yeah.
Just keep the broadheads with the bow upstairs. That would be cool until it ran across the road.
Yeah.
And then it would suck. But yeah, also, Justin, first time sitting in a saddle.
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know if I'll buy one or not. I'm interested in it, but I don't know if I want to take the plunge.
I'm super on the fence about it because I told you, like, I've been really thinking about switching to just a hang-on, like selling my saddle setup, the platform and the saddle itself, and then buying a lone wolf and just hunting with a regular climber because I've already got a harness.
Right.
I've got a muddy harness I could use. It's got a lineman's belt on it. You know, and we've talked, we can get into this later, but we talked about making our own sticks and, you know, or just switching over to carbon sticks in general. But I've been thinking about switching that setup and going to a hang-on. Because, like, I don't know.
I like to sit down.
Yeah. It's hard to have, like, there's pros and cons to both. I think saddle hunting, and the hang-on guys are going to hate this, but I think saddle hunting is a little bit more mobile. Like, I can just, I feel like I can just get into some nastier stuff with a saddle. If you're really into hang-on stuff, like, whatever. But the saddle, because you're leaning against something, you've got more adjustability versus with a hang-on. You only have so much adjustability in your stand, you're probably still going to be leaning at an angle. You know, you sit down and you're going to be like leaning back on something. And I'm sure there's guys that would do it, but
yeah, and there's ways to adjust that too. But it is a little, it's probably easier with a saddle to get into some nasty trees.
Well, and the setup is just lighter weight. Like a saddle platform, you're never going to have a hang-on tree stand that's going to way less than a saddle platform just because of the nature.
Right.
Saddle platform's not very big. So, you know, it's a little bit lighter weight, but then you also have the weight of the saddle. And if you switch to a hang-on, you've got just the weight of the harness, which it probably equates to the weight of your saddle, you know. So there's a little bit of a trade-off. But I think for me, 9 times out of 10, the trees I hunt, I could be just fine with a traditional hang-on. Like hang and hunt, especially something like that lone wolf, the hybrid, where it's a really, really small hang on.
Right.
It's basically a saddle platform with a seat. That thing would be like perfect for what I like to do.
Yeah.
Because the flip side of that is you could also get, you could also just use your lineman's belt on your regular tree harness and saddle hunt off of that platform if you really had to turn around. You know what I mean? Just lean against that lineman's belt.
Right.
Because that's what you do when you first set up the saddle and leave your long tether attached to the tree. So if you did, you know, screw something up and fall, you're going to be caught. But that, I mean, changing the game, you know, custom gear, that lone wolf stuff is sweet.
Yeah, you should buy it because I really want to check it out.
It's so expensive. I think it's like $700.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But it's billet versus my platform now is Cast, that Predator right. platform.
Yeah, my lone wolf is Cast too.
So Tethered has an entry level, I forget what they call it. I think it's the workhorse or something like that. We'll look at it later. But it's basically like Chevy and GMC, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like it's made by, or Mission and Matthews. It's made by Tethered, and it's got the same technologies to it, but it's not like the flagship stuff. You know, they cut some corners to save costs or whatever. So, you know, I have the Tethered Phantom saddle, which for a while was like the cream of the crop. Like, it's the best saddle on the market. Super lightweight, super adjustability. It's got Molly all over it, you know. I've got that custom platform holder or whatever on it. But the newer stuff that they have come out with, it's a little bit more affordable with that, whatever their brand is.
We should go to the
the
Mobile Hunter Expo next year.
The Mobile Hunter Roadshow?
I don't know.
Are you talking about the Cody DeQuisto one? Or?
I don't know for sure. I just heard there was a expo for all stuff mobile hunting. I think it'd be pretty cool to check out.
Yeah, so there's a Mobile Hunter Roadshow that Cody DeQuisto does.
Hmm.
And that is, I think the last one they're doing is Iowa? And it's like coming up. It might even have been this weekend.
Hmm.
But that would be really cool to check out.
That and the Tradbow Expo down in Kalamazoo. Yeah.
We definitely should do that. It's really hard because there's so many options for mobile hunting now. You know, like when you got into it, you've got the Alpha or whatever from the original Lone Wolf stuff.
Yeah.
And back in the day, they were the only ones really doing that kind of stuff. Right. That's why Lone Wolf became Lone Wolf, because everybody else was hunting out of a, you know, 170-pound ladder stand. That's not very mobile, right?
Right.
And then here comes Andre DeQuisto, Cody's dad, and he starts just banging stuff out. You know, he started with plywood stands. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah. He started making, he started with plywood hang-ons.
Wow.
And then eventually went into cast aluminum, and now all that stuff's billet aluminum.
Yeah.
And they mill it out, which is part of the reason it's so expensive.
Oh, yeah. It's just expensive.
But beautiful. Their stands are like flawless. It's pretty incredible. So, it would be really cool to check out, but the market, it's so watered down right now. You'd have to do something that like really set yourself apart. Cuz like Tether didn't invent saddle hunting, but they had the marketing for it.
Right.
And they just took off, you know, and it was basically, my understanding is just a group of guys that were into saddle hunting, and they just started making what they wanted in their stuff, and that's why they have some really nice stuff.
Right.
You know, is that like these guys actually saddle hunt, and they know what we want as saddle hunters. You get their new setup, like their newest platform just dropped. It's all carbon. It's just over 2 pounds.
The platform's carbon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Just over 2 pounds in a carbon platform. And then, you know, you got like 4 pounds in sticks with the one sticks. So you got like a 7 pound setup.
That's crazy.
Which my platform, I think, is just under 3 pounds. So there's not a huge difference between the carbon platform and the aluminum platform. And I think part of that's just because they need the rigidity. So there had to be more carbon there than right. You could have like more aluminum. But the advantage of that is you don't get the metal clinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's another, you know, I have to wrap everything in stealth strips and all that. But I really like the one sticks. They are shorter than the Skeletors, though. It's like a 17-inch step, which is annoying. I think they did that for strength because they're still rated for 300 pounds.
Yeah.
So getting into this custom stick thing, Justin and I had a conversation about trying to make our own custom climbing sticks. And I watched a couple of YouTube videos on some guys making stuff. And one of the things that kept being brought up is like, we don't weigh 300 pounds. Our stuff doesn't have to be rated to 300 pounds. You know, like I would only need a stick to be rated to like safely probably 250 if I've got 20 pounds worth of gear on and I'm climbing up into a tree and I've got that stick on. I probably weigh, you know, with a 20 pound bag on, I'm right around 220, yeah, maybe 215. And if it's rated to 250, you know, like we're good. For you, you probably only need one rated to like 200 pounds.
Yeah, if that.
So,
because I don't climb with anything.
Right. Well, exactly. So that's another advantage. And then the other thing is you can get those steps further apart because you and I can physically lift our legs higher than someone who would weigh 300 pounds.
Right.
Which, not to dog on anybody, but it would be kind of funny to watch someone that weighed 300 pounds try to climb up in a saddle.
That would be
funny.
That would be
kind of funny. I know they do it for safety purposes.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have somebody who's 250, 260 with a 30-pound bag on. And they're like, we need a little bit of adjustability here.
Yeah. And those things, they're rated for 300 pounds. They could probably take more than that.
Yeah. The Hawk Heliums couldn't. Oh, really? Because those were rated for 300 pounds, and I weighed, at the time when I was using those Hawk Heliums, I was probably 220, 230 with a bag on. So I was probably total like 250. And I bent the shit out of those steps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It won't even fully close back into like the base of the stick.
Wow.
Because it's got the fold. It's a copy of the Skeletors.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, it's brutal. I'm surprised. Their saddle stuff is not. Like, their hang-ons and their regular tree stands from Hawk are pretty good because they're doing their own thing.
Yeah.
But with their saddle hunting stuff, they just tried to copy Tethered along the way. There was a huge lawsuit.
Oh, really?
They on the Predator platform, you see it's got those little wings on the corners, the front corners of the stand, so you can get your feet out a little bit wider. And those little wings, I guess, were patented from Tethered. And so Hawk came out with their platform, and Tethered's platform was called the Tethered Predator platform, and Hawk came out with a platform that was called the Hawk Apex platform, and it had those little wings on it. Yeah. So there was a huge lawsuit.
Damn.
And they still sell the Apex platform because it doesn't say Predator, but like, it's still a copy, but it doesn't have those wings anymore. So that, you know, a lot of guys getting into it, they look at, you know, hey, this is really good. Like, I want to do this, whatever. I'm going to buy a Hawk system. It's like, no, it's cheap for a reason. It's garbage.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, it's like with anything, harnesses, climbing sticks, tree stands, whatever, like everyone's trying to save money. But at the end of the day, like you are literally trusting your life to this thing. You should make sure it's of good quality. You know, I wouldn't trust my life to the Hawk stuff anymore. You know, a tree stand, sure. But that saddle stuff, from what I've seen, I would not want to be standing on their platform for an all-day hunt.
Yeah.
I'd be so scared it was going to snap. So sketchy.
That would suck.
That would really suck.
For smack against the tree.
Yeah, dude. I've had some times like trying to turn around to like take shots, just screwing around in the backyard, where it's like, okay, I can't turn that far because you like spin around and smack yourself on the tree or something like that.
Yeah.
You're not going anywhere because you got the tether on and whatever, but
still going to suck.
It hurts. You got to be careful. You might drop your bow, you know?
Yeah.
But that's another thing, you know, talking to Jared, is if we're going to hunt together, at least, you know, a couple of us at a time, like we got to find a way to get Jared into a tree.
I have a old hang on, but it's like
it's a big one.
It's a big, like, you, steel.
You hunt with a giant hang on.
Yeah, it's the bigger one. I like to, like, most of the hunting I do, I sit for a long time, so I wanted the bigger platform.
You don't need it, though.
I don't need it, but I wanted it.
I mean, I can maybe borrow something from a family member, but it would be like a climber stand, so it'd be big.
Yeah. Well, we should look into that workhorse stuff. And
I can also just bite the bullet and invest in something.
Well, but
you can hunt from the ground, too. Like, I hunted from the ground for a couple years before I bought that stand.
You can. It's
especially rifle.
A lot harder. Right. Well, I'm talking about bow season.
Yeah. It's a lot harder, but you can do it. It's not bad.
I guess the main thing for me is, like, I like getting into the same tree. Like, if you and I go out in public, I want to be in the same tree, and you're just going to hunt, like, if you're at 15 feet, I'm at 18, you know, or vice versa. You have somebody set up just a little bit taller than you and, like, 90 degrees to you in one direction or the other.
Right.
And you just set up like that. And so to get Jared into a tree, whether we look at the newer workhorse stuff or something like that, because I have that Hawk, it's a climbing stick with the platform on top, and I didn't have any issues with that. I used that for an entire season. So that, you know, you don't have to go buy a new platform. You just have to have a way to attach yourself to the tree or get some sort of hang on that is mobile. But there's nobody out there that's really doing anything that's like affordable mobile hang on stands.
Right. Everything's going to be $500.
So it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, I get it, because I'm sure the machining process isn't cheap, but it's like, yeah. Damn. I don't know.
Nothing's cheap anymore.
Nothing. I told you, I mean, to make our own carbon sticks, the only advantage of it at this point is to have exactly what you want, because the rest of it is going to be the same price as buying a set of carbon sticks.
Yeah.
So who knows? But yeah, are you thinking you're going to get new climbing sticks before hunting season?
No. Hunting season's pretty close.
If you and I hunt together and we know we're going to like go sit somewhere together, whatever, yeah, we should just use my sticks to get into the tree. And you should carry like an extra one to like get yourself up, and then you can hang your stuff on it.
Right.
But then you don't have to carry all of your sticks in.
Yeah, that'd be handy.
Because I'm sure those are heavier than the Skeletors.
Oh, for sure.
Especially being a three-step.
Yeah. I don't remember how much they weigh, but I want to say they're... I have three of them, and I think it's 10 to 12 pounds just for the sticks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I think my whole setup... That was with my backpack, though. My whole setup was like just about 30 pounds. Like backpack, stand.
Well, how much does the stand weigh then? Stand's not that heavy then. It's like 20 pounds?
No, it's less than that.
Yeah, that's less than what I thought it was
going to be. It might be 15.
I thought it was going to be like way expensive. I expected it to be like, or way expensive, way heavy. I thought it was going to be like 30 pounds.
It's not. No, it's not that heavy.
Yeah, we'll have to brainstorm with that. What we should do is, you know, we keep talking about these different days we need to do stuff, but we'll have to do something after work where we go out, even if it's just by your house on public, and go find a tree and both try to get in it.
Right.
And just see how it works. It's going to be clunky. It's always clunky the first few times I use my saddle. Oh, you know, yeah. Just a couple weekends ago, I climbed a tree with the saddle for the first time. It took me 15 minutes to get all set up. Like, that's a long time.
Right. It's not terrible, though. I mean,
no, it's not, but you have to, like, you know, if I go out right now and it's like, okay, I'm gonna go hunting, and say it's 1:30 in the afternoon, I'm like, okay, I want to be in the stand by 3 o'clock. I know I need to leave my house by 2. I'll get to the property like 2:20, and I should be able to get into a stand, a pre-hung set, by 3 o'clock and be hunting.
Right.
You do that with a saddle, you got to give yourself an extra 30 minutes, you know? And so that part's just tricky. But if you're hunting the same spot over and over again, just hang a preset.
Right. I got a couple, I got a ladder stand that I want to hang somewhere in public. I don't know, just so I have a spot. Like if I'm going you know, after work or whatever.
If you got like 2 hours.
Yeah, I got 2 hours. I just want to go and hunt, like,
yeah,
just to have a spot set up. I don't have to think about it.
We should do that because I've got a bunch of extra compression straps from the Modus because I'm not using it right now.
Right.
They're all sitting in the Manimal. So we can just strap stuff onto our packs and take it out there.
Yeah.
And it's also good practice for just hiking with the pack because I haven't done any of that.
Really?
No. I want to. We need to.
Yeah.
I feel confident. Like, I've hiked enough. I'm in good enough shape to where, you know, if I had 50 pounds on that and we only had to go, like, 2 or 3 miles, I think I'd be fine. I'd be hurting, you know, because I'd be like, man, this, I've never done this before, but I know I could do it.
Yeah.
If we had to go any more than that, or if I was any heavier than 50 pounds, I don't know. I don't know how I would do with that. That's tricky.
You'd be fine once.
Yeah.
You can do anything once.
Well, if I can physically carry the bag, and as long as I don't break anything, I'll be fine. So, like, if I put 100 pounds on that bag and I didn't break any bones in my body and I hike 10 miles, I'm going to be sore as fuck. But you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ideally. You'd be
fine. Just bring some beer with you.
Ideally, you'd have a 170 strap to your pack when you do something like that. But
that would be cool.
Whatever. I have this vision in my head of, like, my dream deer right now. And it's like a 170. And it's taller, slightly taller than it is wide. As I don't like the bucks that look super, super wide.
Yeah.
It's like in my head, I'm like, dude, I know I'll probably never get an opportunity at a deer like that, but I want one.
Not with that attitude.
Not until I'm hunting my own place and I can grow deer the way I want to grow deer.
You can buy one from a deer ranch and
no.
Put it in your fenced-in yard.
No. You got a deer right there?
Oh, yeah. There's two of them.
Couple does?
I'm trying to figure it out. They're over across the road on the neighbors.
Get that bleak can out.
behind a few trees. One of them's a buck.
Little guy?
Yeah.
What's it score, Jared?
Like two.
Two? It's a spike buck.
Yeah.
Dude, there was
it's either a spike or a four.
I was looking back at some records. There was a spike killed in Kent County. Back in the 70s, that scored 58.
What?
Yeah, so it's like Spikezilla that has, you know, two giant spike antlers on it and just like heavy mass. That's a legit cull buck.
Right.
Like his genetics were just trash, but
it's like when really you see the spike elks.
Yeah.
They just look goofy.
That's probably what it looked like.
Probably, yeah.
You know, I'm like a 58. That's. Because you got to think, like, though, so that means his tines were probably about 20 inches long a piece, you know, and then you've got four mass measurements.
Yeah. I saw one up at my cabin that looked like a six or something. It had kind of like the basket.
Yeah.
But it was just a spike.
Yeah.
But they looked like it looked like a.
Yeah, it had the main beams of like a it basket was
just,
six.
Yeah, it was just main beams.
Yeah, I've seen one of those, too.
I was like, dude, what the hell is
that's
that?
That's the deer I called Spikezilla.
Yeah.
At the property. Because, like, I got a picture of him, and I blurred out the antlers and sent it to the property owner. I was like, how old do you think this guy is? He's like, probably two, maybe three. I showed him his antlers. He's like, oh, my gosh, that poor deer.
Right.
Because we can't shoot spikes around here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would.
Right.
But, yeah, that property has so many does on it, and it just continues to hold them.
Yeah.
We won't have any bucks over there until it's time to rut.
Right.
We got like some bachelor groups that'll make their way through, but the problem is like the neighbor to the west has like all bedding and like woods. You know, so that's like where they're spending, especially the bucks. That's where they're spending most of their time.
Yeah.
And then they'll make their way either to the east property, the property to the east of where we're at, or they'll come onto the property I hunt to eat a little bit. But the bucks are weird. The does love it because that property has some cover on it and then also has food with different food plots and everything. And there's a ton of like crabapple trees. So they love that. But yeah, it just it's just not bringing in the bucks. There's also a big coyote problem. So if you see any coyotes during that early antler list, make sure you plug them.
Oh, really?
Yes. The property owner will not be mad that you, what, you're shooting and it's not a deer. No, he doesn't care. Shoot as many coyotes as you want.
Okay. Check.
So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting season, though. I am excited, but I have high hopes that I'll get a buck this year. And I'm just really hoping I don't screw myself by getting my hopes up for no reason. So
it happens.
Because I know I'm going to, like last year, I had high hopes of shooting a good buck. And I had multiple, like, 110-inch deer walk underneath me. You know, like a three-year-old, eight little basket eight-point. And it's like, dude, most of the time I shoot this deer, but I'm trying to hold out for a good one. You know, and then never had a shooter walk in a range last year. So. Yeah.
I won't do that.
I know. You'll shoot the little guy.
Yeah.
But whatever. Everyone's happy with what they have.
I would burn my buck tags on does.
I think you can technically do that.
You can, yeah. Like, if I don't have any more doe tags.
Yeah.
I see a nice doe out there. Maybe not my big buck tag, but the little one.
The combo.
Yeah, because I get the combo every year.
Yeah, me too.
I think you can only burn one of those on a doe with the combo tag.
You can use
both. I'd have to look at the tag. I think both of them have male and female on the tag.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can shoot two females.
I'm
pretty sure the rule is you can shoot one female. So the way we always did it was you use your big tag on the female if you want. That way you can shoot a little buck if you need to.
Right, true.
But you can always go bigger.
Yeah.
Because you can use that little buck tag on a big buck.
Right. Yeah, that's, I guess, what I meant is big buck.
Well, tag. So the other thing is you can buy, we covered this. I forget how many antlerless tags are going to, I think it's 10.
I remember. I got to buy some, actually.
I think you can buy 10
antlerless. Yeah, for this early antlerless thing, is it like the farmer supplies that, or do we go out and buy a bunch of tags?
Oh, you go buy whatever tags you want.
Oh, okay. And it's not the lottery or whatever like they used to do.
You go over the counter. You go pay $5 and they'll give you however. I'm gonna probably go buy. I'll probably buy 4 or 5 doe tags plus my combo.
Yeah, I already bought my combo and stuff.
Because the thing of it is like if we go out and we shoot. Say you shoot 4 does.
Is this farmer going to donate the meat that we don't take?
I don't know. Probably most of it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I was going to say, I'm not going to take 4 deer. I'm good with one. I'm
gonna fill my freezer up.
Yeah. I mean, you do whatever you want. I should talk to him about what he is going to want to do with the meat. Last year, he donated a bunch of it. I can't imagine me keeping more than 2 deer. It might be one of those things where, let's say I take 3 deer, I might keep all 3 of those deer and just fill the freezer. And then if I shoot a buck, I'll have to deal with freezer space. You know, maybe I'll just have a bunch of people over and we'll just eat a bunch of venison. But, because my goal is to, next year, I've talked to my parents about this, whatever, like my mom specifically. I was like, you know, we buy so much ground beef because we also will make food for the dogs. They're not eating kibble all the time. It's just like healthier for them.
Yeah.
So she'll buy lean ground beef for the dogs as well. Like, you're spending all this money on buying ground beef. If we just fill the freezer with venison, like, everyone that lives in the house now, you know, myself, my brother, and both my parents, like, they don't care whether it's venison or ground beef. Like, if we make tacos or chili or something like that, it was like, let's just fill the freezer with venison and then just eat venison for most of the year.
Yeah.
You know, until we run out.
My whole goal is to not have to buy beef at the store.
Yeah. Well, your kid probably doesn't care.
Oh, he loves venison.
You know, and a lot of times, I mean, I hate to be the one to say this, but like if I were to make tacos for my sister, I could make venison tacos for my sister. She'd never know it was venison.
Right.
You'd never know. Mostly because of the spices and everything in it. But like, it's red meat. So it's going to take on whatever flavor you season it with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I'll have to talk to him about what we're doing with the meat. So it'll be a good good thing to check on. I am really excited for that, though. Because last year, I was in a spot where I didn't have a good... I didn't have a good shot at anything. Like, the does that came into range were at, like, 200 yards, and I was shooting at 300, and I wasn't very confident with it. Like, it was sighted in to 100, but then I was like, it's been weird before. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I didn't end up shooting anything. Everybody else did. There's like 12 does taken that day.
Wow.
But I didn't shoot any of them because I had one at 200, and I actually told the property owner, I was like, hey, I've got this deer at 200 yards. Like, I can take a shot at it. And he was like, if you're not confident in it, don't do it, because I don't want to wound a deer. So, which is kind of why I texted him. I was like, if you really want to press it, like, I'll try a shot, but I can't guarantee anything.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No. So, but this year I'm fucking dialed. And I know it's sighted into 100. So if we can shoot out to 200 here, I'd like to do that just to see where it hits.
Yeah, I would like to see where mine, I mean, I pretty much know where it's at, but just to...
I think if I, like, so I always aim for the lower third of the lung.
Yeah.
And so if... You know, if I'm at 100 yards, I'll aim there. If I'm at 200 yards, I think if I just aimed for, like, the middle of the lung, I'd probably be fine.
Right, and you're shooting that 308 or whatever, so that thing is going to drop 3 inches.
Right.
From 100 to 200, so it's, I mean, you just hold it up just a little bit, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, if it's 3 or 4 inches, I'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
The only thing that would get tough, like, I mean, 300 yards would be the same thing. If I aim for, like, the top of the deer... You know, not holding off of it, but like hold top of the lung and I hit bottom of the lung. Great. The only thing, even at 200 yards, I'd be concerned about wind. 100 yards, I'm not concerned about it because it's, I think it's traveling fast enough to where, as long as I don't have like a 25 mile an hour crosswind, it's going to be fine. But like 200 and 300 yards with a 15 mile an hour wind, it'll probably blow it a little bit.
A little bit, but not enough to worry about it.
You don't think so? No. Even at 300?
No.
Really? I would have thought, like, say you got 15 mile an hour crosswind, I would have thought that bullet would move like 6 inches.
No way.
You don't think so?
Nope.
Well, I mean, like I said, I've never shot past, I think I've shot 200 yards before, because I know I've shot 170.
Is it just with that gun or like ever?
No, ever. I've never shot past 200 yards.
Yeah, so the thing that's going to hinder you is just skill. Like,
yeah.
Especially at 300. And
oh, no, I would not shoot this season, I'm not shooting a deer at 300.
Yeah, and if you have, like, a, you know, perfect bench rest, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you're shooting out of a tree stand, that's a whole different ball game.
No, so rifle season, I'm going to hunt in the box blinds.
Oh. Are we in a box blind for that?
No.
Okay.
Depending,
is there any sort of rest, or are you just freehanding it?
So, where I would recommend you sit is like a plywood shack. It was called the Warming Shack, and it's basically a box blind,
yeah,
with windows cut in it. So you'll have some sort of a rest.
Okay, because I'd like, but the 200 yards freehand, it gets dicey.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to take a 100-yard shot freehand with my rifle on a deer right now, because that gun weighs like 9 pounds.
Right.
The other one is a ladder stand with a gun rail on it.
Yeah.
So you'd have some sort of a rest either way.
Yeah.
And then you could also, if you wanted to, you could bring like a shooting stick or something. Yeah. Those box blinds don't have anything in them. sometimes somebody will, like they're one of the other guys, James, that hunts the property, he'll leave his shooting stick in there just so he doesn't have to take it in and out.
Yeah.
So like if you were to hunt, like there was a couple times last year I hunted his box blind just because I knew he had a shooting stick in there. But then when I shot that doe with the 300, was I shot that one at like 80 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like way, it was like 4 inches right. That's how I knew that there was something wrong with the gun.
Right.
But when I did that, I just grabbed, I shot out of the vertical window for where you'd shoot your bow out of. And I just grabbed the window and rested the gun on my wrist.
Yeah.
And was able to shoot that way. And I had a steady hold or whatever. But yeah, it's different. I got a vertical foregrip on that, or a angled foregrip on that gun. I'm going to take it off because I don't know. I'm going to take it off at least for hunting season.
Yeah.
It just gets in the way. When you're freestanding, it's nice because I feel like I can shoulder it better than just grabbing the barrel.
Right.
Because it's a little bit more comfortable for my hand. But if I'm going to be like rested on something, I feel like it's going to get in the way. And I don't want to stick my gun all the way out the window to take a shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. How do you do, like, if you hunt out of that lone wolf, how do you shoot?
I just freehand it.
Really?
Yeah.
So that buck you shot last year, was that,
was that
freehand?
That was out of a ground blind, but yeah, that was just freehanded too.
Did you build that ground blind, or is it like a pop-up or something?
It was a pop-up. And I just kind of put my, like, I'll put my, you know, arm on the, you know, on my leg or something or whatever.
Do you like the sling trick?
No, I take my sling off when I'm in a ground blind or something.
Really?
Sometimes when I'm in a tree stand, too, I'll take the sling off just so it doesn't get in the way.
Hmm. Well, it's nice because you can hang it on stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes. But I just kind of support it. And
that 30-30, I'll have to bring that sometime to show you. But that old Marlin that my dad's got.
Yeah.
That sling's, it's like perfect length. It's all leather.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, cowboy gun.
Has to.
But it's like perfect length. When you throw it over your shoulder, you can put your hand right down here and just put your thumb through the lever and keep the gun vertical.
Right.
As you, like, whatever. But then when you have to go brace it, you can, it gets thinner at the bottom. So you can do like that wrap around your arm.
Yeah.
And
right.
Brace it. It's perfect. That gun is, if I had that gun, the only thing I would change is, well, two things. I would change the ammunition and I would change the scope on it because the scope's from like the 70s.
Right.
And it's not great. It's also only it's a fixed 3x scope. So yeah. It's hard to shoot like 100 yards is my limit with that, with right. 3x because I'm not that skilled.
Yeah.
But. And it just gets foggy, like low light is not great, whatever. But that, and then switching to those soft tip pointed bullets so you can use it in the tube.
Yeah, I would use, if I was hunting with a 30-30, I'd use those Hornady Levirutians.
Is that what?
It's a polymer tip.
Yeah.
But.
Won't set the primer off.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, that bullet is like, especially in the 30-30 is, I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Because my dad right now, it's sighted into round nose.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to touch it because the gun's like when I say it's sighted in, it's sighted in.
Right.
You could probably, like, I couldn't. My dad could take that gun and shoot, like, the bottle cap off that beer.
Right. That's cool.
At 100 yards with a 3x scope from the 70s.
Right.
In a lever action 30-30. Something about cowboy guns, man. It's getting colder. Feeling more like deer season, man.
This whole weekend.
Yeah, it's been great. Just,
oh, man. I love it.
Justin, what's the longest yard you've shot?
At a deer?
No, just period. You get into long-range shots or not really?
I want to. I've shot 300 a lot. But past 300, I haven't really shot much.
Hmm. Have you shot a deer at 300?
No, I think the furthest I've shot a deer at is like 170, 180, somewhere in there.
It's still a poke, dude.
Yeah, it was a poke out of a tree stand.
Yeah, freehanded?
No, I had a rail. but
was that the one you shot when it was running?
No. No, that one
allegedly.
That one was only hell, that was probably only 30, 40 yards.
Really?
Yeah. It was running at me and then it turned sideways. It was a group of like three does.
I think the longest shot I've taken was 400 yards.
At a deer?
No. No, at a deer, like the longest is maybe 100, maybe a little more. That's it.
Yeah.
We don't really have firing lanes that go poke out much further past that where I hunt. My grandpa's got lanes that poke out to like 400 yards.
That's and wild.
That's a long shot on a deer.
Oh, yeah. We don't really let him take those shots anymore.
Yeah.
He's made a few mistakes that... Yeah, he blew the hind leg off a deer once. Mm. So
old grandpa getting it done.
Yeah,
one of the guys that will likely shoot that antlerless on that property. Last year he shot, I think he shot four does, but one of them was like 350 yards away.
Wow,
6'5" guy though.
Yeah,
it was effective though.
Oh dude, yeah, 6'5" would be good. On I mean, that's, yeah, that's.
Yeah, that that range up in Chassel had some sweet, sweet. It was just sweet stuff overall. But their firing lanes, they had a 50, 100, 200, 300, 400. Yeah. And I remember I went from the 100 over to the 200, and it was just fine. And then I went over to the 300, and I was aiming at like a, they had steel gongs mm-hmm. that you could shoot at. And I was aiming at the top of the gong, and I didn't hear the ping. So I aimed at the wood beam that it was hanging from. Didn't hear the ping. Finally, I just aimed right at it, and ping.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I was like, what? You know, because I was just using my AR with a red dot on it. So yeah. I'm like, you know, how do I aim with this thing? Right. This is my first time taking a long shot with it. Hmm. The red dot has absolutely no zoom. So I'm just sitting there trying to aim way high, thinking that this bullet's going to drop and nothing. And then I think I took like four or five shots out at 400 yards, and I missed four of them.
I've done 100 yards with my pistol. That's fun.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard.
It is hard.
Well, I've got a red dot, but
still.
Yeah. It is still
It hard. Doesn't matter.
It's still hard. It's much easier when you can like rest it.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, it's not easy.
No, I think the longest shot that we would take at EPA was like 25 yards.
Yeah.
Most of them were like 25 feet.
Yeah.
And those ones were even harder too, because I think the longest ones that I took in competition were at either a 5 or a 6 inch steel gong that you had to hit to knock down a wire that set off a moving target.
Oh.
And you couldn't move on past around until you hit that moving target, and you had to hit that steel gong way back there to set it off.
Yep.
So it was funny too, because everyone else was missing them. You know, I think it was, there were a majority of the people were running red dots, but there was quite a few like me that were just running irons, and you'd watch, they take like 4 or 5 shots at those suckers. It always felt good when you got on the first shot though.
25 yards with your pistol?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
But the other thing, too, is, like, you're moving around, you're running, you're trying to be fast, there's pressure because it's competition.
For
like
sure.
It's not just, like, you go out there and you take your time, you line up your shot.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
You just got done snap firing 2 rounds, and you're over here at the next target trying to be as quick as possible. Get 1 shot, and you're already moving to the next target before you hear the ping.
Yeah.
And you don't hear it, so now you're moving back to it. You know, it's... That's the thing, is like you don't sit there and you fire and then you go to the next one, stop, fire, go to the next one, stop, fire. It's supposed to just be like a smooth sweeping motion where it's you sweep across targets and pop 2 shots in each one as you sweep. Like you don't want to be pausing at each one. Otherwise your time goes way down. So that's if you miss, that's where you get into, all right, now I have to go back and pause at that target and then move the opposite direction. You want to have a fluid motion.
Yeah, that sounds really difficult.
It was, like, the big thing was, you know, everyone can make a good shot with a pistol if you take your time and line it up. It was throwing that speed and everything else into it, and then you've got different targets mean different things too.
Were there guys that were like crazy good at it?
Oh yeah, we had a few guys that had sponsors, and they had the space guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2011s or whatever with compensators and
right.
Big old blocks on the end of the mags to get bigger grip, and yeah, they had. There's one guy that was running the brass palm swells on his 320, so that the gun was heavier.
We got flared magwells on everything and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're all competition guns. It's
are you
custom stippling?
Have you ever thought about shooting a deer with a pistol?
Yeah. When I want a revolver, I want a 357. It'd be cool to shoot a buck with that, but
that's hard. Yeah. Ask Justin about it.
Yeah, super hard.
Well, the other thing is like, once you get into that, you need to commit to shooting it with the pistol, because if you set it down and go back to rifle, you've just wasted a bunch of time.
That's where I messed up.
That's what you did, yep.
Yep. It's the way it goes.
Yeah, it's tricky, because you don't know. You just don't know what they're going to do. You know, the only time I would be certain of a deer's movement, and not even 100% certain, you could be like 60 to 70% accurate, is when it's like rut time, you see a buck out in a field, you grunt at him, and he starts coming your way. You have a pretty good idea that he's going to get into range, right, and offer you some sort of a shot. But the other thing is, like, is he going to wind you? Is he going to pick up some sort of scent on his way to you? Something else catches his attention? Like, there's still a lot of unknowns. But most of the time, like, if it's just a doe walking through, you have no idea what she's going to do. Absolutely no idea. So it's tricky. You know, it's not the easiest thing in the world. But it's just like bow hunting. Sometimes you just, you know, you don't have the shot. So like you said, commit to it. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe don't even take your rifle in the woods with you. It's like,
yeah, I don't know about that.
I did that in a couple years where I had like dedicated ladder stands for bow hunting, where there was still a little bit of rifle season left after I got back up from the our cabin there, and I just took my revolver out, you know, because yep. I could only see 20 yards, you know, it was like a dedicated bow spot.
Yep.
But I was like, you know, I might as well take the pistol. And
I get it in scenarios like that, but if you're going out to where like, oh, I get one that's in close range, I can take a pistol shot.
That would be a thing for me where it's like,
you gotta have your rifle.
I would wait for the deer to get into pistol range before I pulled my pistol out.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not gonna be like, oh, this deer's coming right to me. I'm gonna get my, especially if it's like a big buck, I'll get my pistol ready. No. It'd be one of those things where it's like, okay, this deer's at 30 yards. I'm gonna pull my pistol out. You know? That's kind of the.
By the time it got there, you probably already had a shot with your rifle.
Well, that's the
most likely.
Yeah, that's the bitch of it. I mean, several times during bow season, last year, prime example, I had a doe come running through. This is, you know, first weekend in November or something. It's right before the rut. They're chasing. And I had a doe run through this valley at like 70 yards, and I grabbed my bow and I grabbed my grunt call just in case something showed up, and this buck kind of came through and stopped in the valley. I snort wheezed at him, and he slowed down. I snort wheezed at him. He stopped, and he was standing there for like 15 seconds. Didn't see another buck, and then he took off. But, you know, 75 yards, I think, is what I ranged where he was standing at. If I had a rifle, he'd have been done. He'd been in the truck, like, no problem, you know. It was a deer about this size, you know. Good buck. But 75 yards with a bow, like, I'm not taking that shot on a whitetail. No. Not with a 15-year-old bow, you know what I'm saying? Like, my traverse, if I cranked that thing up to 70 pounds and had 75% let off on it, yeah, I might stretch it. 70 yards,
probably 70 yards, not crazy.
There are guys that have done it, you know. Levi Morgan, I know, has done it. Josh Bomar's done it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's possible, but the problem is, like, that deer's going to react to that shot, especially in a situation like that. If it's just a buck feeding, you know, it's October 2nd, he has no idea you're there, and you have all the time in the world to take your shot, great. When you just stopped a buck with a snort wheeze and he was actively chasing a doe, you don't have all the time in the world. You got to draw that bow back, settle your pin, and shoot as fast as possible. So that's tricky. You know, furthest shot I've taken on a whitetail was just over 50 yards. And jeez, it was, you know, this buck was completely, that 6 point.
Yeah.
He was completely still, just feeding in the plot. And I took a shot. But most of the time, it's hard, dude. You can't be that certain. And that's why I told one of you guys, maybe both of you, I'm going to really try to not take a shot over 40 this year. I've just had deer with that bow specifically. I've had deer react way too much.
Yeah, they can move out of the way so fast.
Yeah, and that bow just doesn't have the speed.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I wanted a new bow. You know, like my Creed, which is from 2013, so it'll be 12 years old this year. That bow compared to the new Matthews Lift 2024. My bow is 70 pounds, 80% let off. Versus I could go shoot a Lift at 80 pounds and 80% let off, and I get like 40 to 45 feet per second difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Because my Creed is launching them at like 270, 275, and that the new Lift is shooting them at like 315 at 80 pounds.
Yeah.
With my, you know, and I have, that was at, I think, 29.5 inch draw length on the 29.5 inch bow, and then 29.5 inch draw length. That's cooking. You know, that's 40 feet per second doesn't sound like a lot, but that's,
oh yeah,
pretty significant.
It's huge.
And I was shooting them with my arrows with those Victories. So it's a 450 grain arrow. It's shooting that 450 grain arrow at like 310 feet per second. That's fucking fast.
That's fast.
That's so, and it's, those bows are super quiet. The new Matthews.
Yeah.
The Lift is probably the quietest bow. The Phase 4 is right there with it. You know, it's basically the same bow. That's last year's model, but
right.
Two of the quietest bows I've ever shot. But it's got the Matthews draw cycle of the new bows. It's like that solo cam, you're like, oh, that was really smooth.
Yeah.
The new bows don't feel like that. They're really aggressive.
Really?
Yeah. And that's why I love that Traverse for 3D, because if you creep, it's gonna pull you. So it forces you to pull against the back wall.
Yeah.
And it's great for competition. But when you're hunting, you don't necessarily want that. So they're fast, but it's kind of like, ugh,
yeah,
bitch.
Trade-off.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just too much. You could get more speed out of your bow, too.
Oh, for sure.
What does that go to, 70 or 75?
I think 70.
And that's the Prime Black Series?
Yeah.
Like the Black 3 or something like that.
The Black 3?
Yeah. That's a solid bow. The grip's weird on it. It's heavy, but you got a bunch of stabilizers and you shoot with the quiver on and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a, what is it, 32 inches axle? 33.
33,
yeah, it is a big bow.
Mm-hmm.
So, shot great though. Draw cycle was pretty smooth. I would call it like a semi-aggressive.
Yeah.
And a rock solid back wall.
Yeah.
I mean, that felt like my Traverse, which is just like an unbelievable back wall.
Right.
It's great. But
yeah, like it's the only compound I've ever had, so I don't have anything to compare it to. But
the only thing that I would do to that bow would be, like you talked about, either building side plates for it or a grip, or maybe just put like that Bomar grip tape,
yeah,
which isn't anything special. You could do the same thing with like they make tennis racket grip tape.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing.
Right.
But I would put some sort of
freaking hockey tape or something.
Yeah, that would work too, because if it's not rubber,
right,
so it's better with moisture. but it gets, you know, everything gets sticky with hockey tape. That's the problem.
You could be like some of the pistol guys. They were funny. They'd put skateboard tape on their grip.
I have that on my Glock. I have skateboard
tape. And that would work for grip, but what you're looking for...
I know, I'm just messing around.
Yeah. You just wouldn't have the comfort.
Right.
It
scratches the shit out of everything.
The skateboard?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would.
I carried that Glock on my backpack.
Oh, yeah.
And I was carrying my, you know, hunting rifle or whatever.
Yeah.
And it scratched the crap out of my scope. I mean, it's basically sandpaper.
It is, it's like 60 grit sandpaper.
Yeah, and it just fucked my scope. Right down to the aluminum.
Yeah.
Super bummer.
Is anyone on the Maven, or this is older?
This scope? Was, yeah, before I changed. That's kind of why I changed it, because I was like, good. That looks terrible now.
Yeah. So are you partial to Maven now?
I like them. I mean, for the price point... I mean, still most of my scopes are Leopolds or Leupolds or whatever.
You want to talk a little bit about Maven for people who don't know what it is?
Yeah. It's basically a direct-to-consumer optics company. They have, you know, binos and rangefinders and rifle scopes and...
Spotting scopes now,
too. And spotting scopes. Yeah. And they're just, you know, that's the same quality as... You'd get in like the higher end, you know, Leupold, Vortex, whatever, but they don't have the markup of, you know, being in the big box stores and whatnot. So they're...
And they're made in the U.S., right?
I think they're assembled in the U.S. I mean, they got, I think, Japanese glass in them.
But they're every optic on the market has Japanese.
Yeah, they all basically use the same glass manufacturers.
With the exception of maybe Swarovski.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, German or something.
Yeah.
Or European. Glass, but and I've been just super impressed with like what you get for the money has been pretty damn good, and you know they got lifetime warranties on them. So I mean,
it would be the equivalent of buying like the Vortex Razor series. So at the Total Archery,
and they have different levels of like they have the C series and the B series.
Yeah,
like my binos are the C-Series. I only have one, that rifle scope that I got from my dad. That one is like their top of the line. And that, you know, it is way better than...
Oh, it's noticeable
compared
to your... Okay.
Oh, for sure.
Because I was able
where
to
Where you
notice
it is the low light. Like that's so where good glass
that's where I'm
and
getting
bad
at.
Glass gets...
My binoculars that I have, like the ones we were using today.
Yeah.
Those are Vortex Crossfire 2.
Right.
They're just like fucking really entry-level binoculars. You know, and then that's going to piss people off because they're $150, right? So like $150 is a good chunk of change.
Yeah.
You know, like obviously most of our stuff is expensive hunting gear-wise, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that's not a lot of money. Like that takes a significant amount of time to make, and like most people... aren't going to want to spend that. But as far as binoculars go, that is really cheap. $150 for a set of, you know, those are 10 by 50.
Right.
So those are pretty entry level. So I was looking at the Razors, the 10 by 42s, because I don't think I need a 10 by 50. I was looking at the 10 by 42s, and those are... $1,600, I think, for 12 or 16, one of the two.
Wow.
Which is a good chunk of change. The Swarovskis are like 26,
yeah.
You know, but then there's a little story behind that. While I was looking at Swarovski. So those are like 26. And the Mavens, I was talking to the guy about, and he was like, yeah, you know, $1,100 for a 10 by 50.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 10 by 40. Well, they don't do a 10 by 42. It's a, they do an 8x42.
Yeah.
At least that he didn't have one, or maybe they didn't make one yet. Or,
my C-Series are 10x42s.
Okay. So maybe he just didn't have one at TAC, but he said that they were like $1,100. You know, which isn't like that much cheaper than the Vortex, But the thing of it is, with that Razor series, that is like their top of the line, like this is the best of the best, whatever. And then that B series from Maven, if you get the same thing, and then the other difference was like if you go from a 10x50 to a 12x50, or the 12x56, I think is what it is, or whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
That's only like $100 difference.
Right.
Maybe not even that. Versus in Vortex, you go from an 8x42 to a 10x50, there's like a $300 difference.
Yeah, and those Mavens are going to compare more to the, you know, Swarovski.
They're
the $2,600 ones.
They're
then
higher quality than the Vortex Razor, yeah, than the top of the line.
The
I looked at them side by side.
Yeah.
And so I looked through, shout out Caden Brockenhouse. There's not a snowball's chance in hell he's listening to this, but he's a homie. Works for a Total Archery Challenge. He was the one doing the caribou shot this year.
Oh.
At least at Crystal. And so we're spotting for a bunch of different guys, whatever. And there's a group of guys I had shot the Ultra View course with, and they wanted to shoot the caribou. So I went over with them. We're shooting the shit, spotting them or whatever. But I was talking to Caden, and he's like, I was asking him about his binoculars. I was like, dude, like, is Swarovski like actually, I asked him, I go, do you have a brand deal with Swarovski? Like, do they sponsor you or whatever? He's like, no. Like, I just like their stuff. And I'm like, okay, is it actually worth the money compared to like, you know, the, like a higher end Vortex or Leupold or whatever? And he goes, all right, what do you got? And I was like, well, this is low end stuff. He's like, that's fine. He's like, let me see it. He looks at him, and you can see like edge blur on the sides, whatever, in low light, whatever. Yeah. He's like, go ahead and look through those at the caribou, whatever. I'm like, okay. He's like, can you see where he hit? I'm like, yeah, he's, you know, 3 inches lower, whatever. He's like, all right. He goes, check this out. Hands me his binoculars. And it was literally like, you ever watch a YouTube video and it'll be in like 720p and then it catches up and it goes into like 4K or 1080p or whatever? That was literally the difference.
Oh, yeah.
There was that much difference. You know, and this is, they were 8x42s and it's top of the line Swarovski. So it's like eons above my low level Crossfire 2s. But it's still like that difference in the way they polish that glass is just unbelievable. I was so impressed with how
it's
well that
it's
worked.
Hard to go back to cheap glass after you've looked through.
Yeah.
Good glass.
That's why I want to get rid of my binoculars.
Yeah.
Like I want a good set of binoculars.
Once I got the Mavens, it was like I started changing all my rifle scopes over.
Yeah.
Because it's just hard to, like, I would, like, look at stuff through my binoculars, and then I would go pick up my rifle to, like, you know, just check it out. And so, it was like, oh, shit, like, I can't see anything.
That was one of the things I was going to say. Because I have a Viper, Vortex Viper scope on my rifle, which is, like, think the second best glass that they sell. And so I can actually see, like, during rifle season, especially that scope is a 6.5 to 20. During rifle season, I'm not bringing binoculars at all. I'm just going to use my scope.
Right.
Because my binoculars are so trash. I could look through something with those binoculars in low light, like right now, and it's going to be fuzzy versus I bring up that rifle scope and it'll be clear as day.
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm kind of like, now maybe not like Vortex Viper, or maybe not like Vortex Razor, but Vortex Viper possibly, or switch to Maven. The problem is all of my stuff is Vortex, you know, it's like proprietary mounts and everything for like a tripod or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's dumb.
So, I mean, it's quarter 20, but it's designed to be used with like the clearance on the sides.
Oh,
For how it's hollowed out.
Right.
Or like ground out or whatever. And then it's got Vortex branding on everything. So then I'm like even my bino harness is Vortex branding.
Yeah.
And if I switch over to Maven, I'm not going to want to have like Vortex branding all over.
You look like a dweeb.
I look like a dweeb anyway because it says Vortex, but they didn't sell Alaska Guide Creations locally. That is an Alaska Guide Creations bino harness. It just says Vortex on it. Right. So I just bought it.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I think I might switch to the marsupial bino harness.
I would. They're really cool.
Somebody did a comparison between the Kefaru and the
best because it's the one I have.
Well, Well, somebody did a... I'm surprised you don't have the Kefaru one.
So they didn't have... When I bought mine, that Kefaru didn't make one.
Okay. And somebody just did a comparison.
I don't think the Kefaru one's that great. There was a lot of people that bought them and either immediately sold them. And I think they fixed some of their issues with their early production ones.
What was the problem?
I don't remember for sure. You know, because I already had mine, so I didn't look into that much. I was just, you know, looking on the Kefaru pages and whatnot. But the reviews were very mixed. And I think they fixed some of that, but... Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been in the market for one, so I haven't really paid super close attention.
I got a bone to pick with Kefaru with that manimal pack on that tactical frame. I forgot the light frame.
Yeah, I forgot to look at that.
Just annoying, dude. You got to jump through a bunch of different loops. And I get it. Like, it's a marketing ploy because they're going to probably try to move away from the Duke. You'll probably come out with a different aluminum frame that's a little bit cheaper than the carbon. But maybe not, because if it's $470 for an aluminum frame, why wouldn't you just buy the arc frame that's carbon for $500?
Right.
And an additional $25-$30.
Yeah, if you didn't get yours on clearance... It would have been dumb to buy the...
Yeah, I mean, but I saved, you know, $320 or whatever buying that other one. So it made sense to do what I did, but it was still frustrating to be like, dude, now I got this nice pack. We already talked about this. Like, yeah. I shouldn't have bought the Modus and the frame. I should have just bought the arc frame with the manimal and then bought a bigger pack later on. Because the reality is I could have got the bag you have if I wanted a giant bag.
Right.
Or like a 44 mag or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just kind of sucks that they didn't want to. Well, I shouldn't even say that. I think that part of the selling point was the manimal is that it was built for the arc frame. And so that's part of the reason why it doesn't work as great.
But even I got the Arborosca or something, or
I forget,
something like that, but I have that. It's made for the arc frame.
Yeah,
and it fits on my frame just fine.
It's not the fitment, like top to bottom, it's the way it attaches to the frame on the sides because of the K-clips. Remember we looked at that?
Yeah, that's right. I think you just need some different straps that are a little bit longer so you can do the
they need to be shorter,
like a little slip. Yeah.
Or the slip knot.
A little bit longer, but so you can use the slip knot.
Longer loop, yeah.
Technique. Because that's what I did, and it works really well. And it keeps it nice and tight to the frame.
The only bitch with that is it's harder to swap around.
Yeah, but...
Yeah. But yeah, with that three-bar system, you know, what they should have done is just made a clip that was like a K-clip on one side, and you could put the three-bar clip in the other side. And then the straps are like, you don't have to fuck with anything.
Yeah.
And it's probably, it probably wasn't cheaper to, I was going to say it's probably cheaper to just do that, but it's probably cheaper to just send extra straps. Looking at something out the window. It looked like there was a pig out there, but I think it's just a turkey or something.
That'd be wild.
I literally thought it was like a wild boar. I was like, dude, get your gun. Because they're a nuisance animal, right? They're like coyotes.
No, I don't think so.
I think wild boar.
I don't think you can just shoot them.
I think you can, but like
my family went on a wild boar hunt, and like it was a certain time of the year that they would go each year. Like it wasn't just randomly
in Michigan.
I don't know if it was in Michigan or not. That's the thing. So like,
yeah,
or I think like
you have to do some research on that because
I think I know. Public, but like if you see a pig running around in the woods around here, someone's farm animal got out.
Unless it has tusks.
Yeah, like a wild boar.
Yeah, no. There's no wild boars around here.
No, not downstate there is.
Downstate there is, but not around here.
Yeah.
Like, I know they're nuisance animals, like, you know, in other states and whatnot, but.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
If you see a pig in the woods, check the regulations before you blast it.
Yeah, for sure.
This is not legal advice.
I did almost shoot the neighbor's chicken one time, though. I was very tempted.
Why is that?
Because this lady had free-range chickens. This is a... I don't hunt this property anymore. This is an older property. I was hunting a little like 7 acre like pie cutter. And so this lady had like free range chickens, but they never stayed on her property because she only had like, you know, 7 acres mm-hmm. or whatever next door. And so constantly I'd be like in the deer woods and there'd be this chicken like, you know, scratching around and
making noise,
make me think that there's a deer coming or something. Then here's this stupid looking chicken. And I'm just like, and they weren't normal looking chickens. They were all like those color phase ones. So this one was like all white, except the head was like partially black. And it was just like strutting around, whatever. And then they had the one rooster who would walk back there and like start fucking making noise, you know. And I'm like, dude, you deserve a 300 Win Mag to the face.
Damn.
Just feathers. That would have been funny. I did shoot a squirrel with my 300 Win Mag, though, one time, just to see what would happen.
Did it disappear?
The top half of it did, yeah. I found, like, literally half of its upper, or, like, you know, if you were to basically chop the squirrel in half, that's what I found. Found the legs and the tail, and a little bit of the body.
Wow.
So, yeah, top half just did whatever.
That checks out.
Yeah.
I think we should go squirrel hunting and fry it up. Little squirrel hunting party.
Dude, I love squirrel.
I've never had squirrel that... I don't think I've ever cooked squirrel properly. The two times I've done squirrel, I cut the meat off and fried it in butter.
I just fried it like chicken. It was good.
Yeah, so I fried it in butter. Didn't taste great. And then the other time is I tried cooking it over a fire, and it was terrible. So, yeah, don't cook squirrel over the fire. It does not taste good.
No.
Like roasting it is literally, because I skinned it.
Do a little spit roast.
It was, yeah, like how you would roast a pig basically over the fire. And I cooked it and I'd like rotate it. And it was terrible. It tasted so bad.
Did you gut it?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's very easy to gut a squirrel.
Yeah, no, I've had them before. They're fun.
Have you ever done the method with a rabbit where you throw it between your legs and just like...
No, I've only shot one rabbit.
What?
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I've never shot rabbit.
It's like the skin just falls off. You just like kind of...
Yeah, you...
You just like slingshot it and the meat shoots out?
I forget how you do it. No, this is like to gut it. You like hold it... I think you hold it by... You hold it by the front legs or maybe the head and you like pick it up over your arms and then you go down towards your legs and you try to throw it between your legs and yeah, like all the guts just like fall out its ass.
That's messed up.
Kind of cool though.
Yeah. Just making it shit its gut outs.
Yeah. Yep. And I...
Guts out.
Oh, there's a deer right there.
Oh.
It's a doe. It's coming up here, Justin.
Is it?
Yep. She's walking.
Let me see.
Oh, she's running.
She's coming
over
here.
She's excited for you, Justin.
She's coming to eat this these acorns.
She wants the, yeah. Where's your spike friend?
Yeah, where's your dad?
That's a nice doe.
It is a nice doe. She does look good for September.
I would shoot that thing for sure.
Early antlerless? Or...
That's an old doe. Look at how long her nose is.
Jared, grab the rope. You're the best at roping here.
Yeah, that'd be kind of funny. Have you guys seen that, the one podcast where it's like I learned a lesson?
Mm-mm.
A dude tried to rope a deer.
Oh, boy.
And the deer kicked the shit out of him.
Yeah, I believe it. Like, look, she's staring at us. She's trying to figure out what's going on.
Like, hoofed him, bit him, took him for a ride.
Yeah, believe
me. I bet.
Just beat the shit out of him.
She doesn't feel very safe.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised.
Is that the tree we were shooting
out of? She's about to run.
Is that the tree we were shooting out of earlier?
No. She's about to run.
I can't really see.
Yeah, the one day I came up here and they were like all the way up by the house.
her ear, she's moving her ears.
Yeah.
But she has flicked her tail a couple of times, which is weird.
Oh, she's looking right at us too, so.
She knows something's going on.
She knows something's going on, but she's like, you're safer now. Look, she flicks her tail and she goes back to eating. So she's just like, yeah, we're just going to.
She's like, yeah, I'm going to go run into the fence over here.
She's headed right towards the tree we were shooting at him. As soon as she gets a sniff of that, she's out. Oh.
She take off?
Nope. She's smelling something.
She smells like.
What's going on? Oh, now she sees me. I wonder if she knows, like, we can't shoot her or something.
When does youth hunt and all that stuff start? It's pretty next soon, weekend. Isn't it? Yeah.
Youth hunt's next weekend.
Youth hunt's next weekend? It's the weekend before the early antlerless?
Yes.
You going to take Colt out for that or what?
No.
Are you, like, scared to get him into deer hunting or something?
He's six. He's not ready for that.
Well, yeah, but you could be one of those dads.
Right.
My son shot this.
13 points.
Yeah,
right. He's just kind of sitting there.
My son shot this 170-inch whitetail in full velvet over a little pile of corn.
Yeah. Well, that's why they made it doe only instead of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, It is as a 2025.
This year. Oh, is it next year?
Yeah. Those regulations don't go into place until 2025.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, some of them are for...
It's your last chance, Justin.
Some of them are for this year, but that doe hunt stuff is for the 2025 season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like the doe tags this year will be $5, but next year you can do doe only during youth season, which is stupid because why wouldn't you just have early antlerless? Why would you have a separate day for just youth hunters? That doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, it does seem kind of weird. It's early, too.
No.
No.
Okay, it's the 8th today. Next weekend will be the 14th, the 15th.
14th and 15th, I think.
The weekend after that is the 22nd, which is early antlerless. And the weekend after that is the last weekend of August. And then you get into bow season.
September.
September, and then you get into bow season.
Yeah, true. I always just remember it like...
Dude, she looks really healthy.
She's eating all these cherries and acorns and probably knocking down my bird feeder.
She looks real healthy. She's at like 20 yards. Oh, there she is. Now she's about to run. No, she's going to come investigate. She's not scared at all. Look, at the bottom of her legs, she's shedding her summer coat. She's getting gray. She's close, dude. That's 20 yards broadside. Now you shoot when her arm's forward. Mm. You do that when you watch deer? You, like, pretend to shoot them?
Oh, yeah.
Should we, someone go grab a picture real quick for the old Knox Nature Instagram?
Yeah, you got your phone?
Yeah.
Just take a picture.
I don't really have a good view right here. I'm going to have to sneak around the window on her.
Just take a picture. Oh, hold on. She's looking. Just take a picture out the window. She's real close.
Be very quiet.
Oh, she's turning. She's going to head towards the front of the cabin here in a second. Oh, she smelled something. She's getting low to the ground. Yeah, she smelled something. She's out of here now. She's
gone.
That's weird. She was like walking close to the ground and everything.
Right. She's going to run across the road. Alan's going to hit her with her Chevelle.
Oh, I would be so disappointed.
That would be a bummer. I saw deer on the way here. You know, it was 5 o'clock or whatever, driving down Valley Road.
Yeah.
I saw 3 or 4 deer on the side of the road.
I believe it.
It was crazy.
I almost hit a deer last night.
That's because you were drunk.
No, I was not. I was actually hungover yesterday from Friday night. But
did you guys go to Encore?
We did.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had my kids, so.
That's right.
I did not go.
No?
No, I was just here. I asked Nick, what are you doing? And he's like, going to hang out with the ladies.
Oh, is that where that story came from? That was encore on Friday?
Yeah, we're
and then, that's an off and then the didn't podcast. Invite me.
Well, I was wearing.
No.
That was an invite in Snapchat. It was like, show up to Encore if you want.
Oh.
That wasn't a...
Yeah, but I was already home.
That wasn't a you're not invited. That was just like a, by the way, we're going to be with women. So like, you know, it's not going to be like a boys thing.
Who'd you go with?
With Jake and his girlfriend, a couple other girls.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but fun weekend. Shit gets busy, man. I mean...
Yeah, I was trying to plan out some stuff with somebody in the, I can't remember who it was now.
Oh,
but I was like, oh, it's like next weekend.
Next weekend is the podcast with Kirk.
Oh, is it?
I'm pretty sure.
Next, oh, fun.
That tentatively, we could also do it after Antlerless. It's just gonna be a later night.
He's doing that on Sunday, right?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. Saturday will not work for me.
I will double check with Kirk on what day that is. But yeah, we got a podcast guest coming up. Be a really cool episode.
Yeah.
So excited for that. The other thing we could do is maybe we'll do it just after work one day or something like that.
Yeah. So
we'll talk to him.
I mean, figure it out. We do it on Sunday and stuff too. I can talk about Oktoberfest. Should have some good stories from that.
Hell yeah.
You're doing that Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh. Are you going to show up Sunday? I guess you live here, so.
Are you going to show up?
I would hope.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit hungover, but.
Yeah, it's fine.
We'll get you out of bed.
Oh, no. I'll have to drive here. We do it at the campground.
Oh, yeah.
You have to drive here the next morning.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be a lot of fun.
Gatorlight works really well.
I've had that. Also,
it tastes like garbage.
Yep.
But it works really well.
Yep. That and Liquid IV.
Yep.
But also it helps that, so the way we do it is like each campsite that we have in the Oktoberfest thing,
yep,
they each supply a drink and a food. So, and it's usually like salty foods and stuff, so you're fine. You eat so much food and there's usually like, you know, we drink a water between stops, so.
Jared will gain 10 pounds.
And by water, I mean Busch Light, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real night of fun. The last year I did it, towards the end, I remember some older guy challenged me to shotgun a beer with him, and I fucking kicked his ass, and then immediately went and puked, so he told me it didn't count.
The only time I've been to the campground with you was the 4th, and I showed up at, what, 11? It was like 10:45, 11?
Yeah,
like that.
We went out on the boat. Were we already drinking when you showed up?
I don't know. Your dad was.
We probably had like a Bloody Mary and some mimosas or something
before you showed up. Dude, I drank Miller Lite from, I'm going to give it a safe, we'll play it safe here and say 11:30. From 11:30 until whenever we went to bed at like 1:30.
Yeah, that was last weekend for me. It was 11:30.
I drank beer consistently for hours, dude. It was
On rough. Labor Day, it was Coors Banquets from 11:30 to I think 2 in the morning.
Damn.
Wow. Then you felt
I like was drinking slow, though. Like, I wasn't pounding them.
Well, that was me on the 4th. You know, I drank.
I was being 12, safe about it.
I drink like 12 beers on the 4th, you know, in 13 hours. No, so
that's not bad.
Whatever. But yeah, I think
might have had a little more than that.
I believe it.
Yeah. Oh well.
Got anything else to say? Think we can wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think we can wrap it up.
Good little episode. Stay tuned. I didn't get an opportunity to get the Instagram thing done, but we will definitely get that done. And yeah, we got Kirk Phipps coming on here shortly, so it'll be a fun episode. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. He's got some stories.
Yeah, he does. Appreciate everyone for listening. Catch you in the next one.